sir?
Samuel Elisha Knight.
Okay, we'll be with you, the Honorable Mr. Cavanis will conduct your hearing, so just hang on to the phone, sir.
May I come forward?
Yes, sir, please do.
You guys know that Mr. Elias was here from the county.
Should be on two phone calls.
We do.
You got the calls?
You can line it, you can make them, sir. Please go right ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Neal, this is yours.
This is yours, I'm going.
Hi, this is Michelle. I'm sorry I missed your call. Please leave a message and I'll get right back to you. Thank you.
Ms. Kennedy, this is Louis Quinones with the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. We're about to begin a hearing for Mr. Knott. We understand that you wanted to participate in the hearing. If you want to participate, please call back at 602-542-5656, the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. Thank you. Contact Ms. Pollack.
Yes.
This is Louis Quinones with the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. We understand you wanted to participate with a parole hearing today.
Yes.
Okay, ma'am. If you can just stay on the phone, we'll be beginning the hearing soon. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, and ma'am, there will come a portion near the end of the hearing where we will ask for your testimony, so if you can just remain silent, we will get to that near the end of the hearing, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Sir, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir.
Well, good morning. Can you state your name and ABC number for the record?
Samuel Elisha Knott, 84838.
Thank you, sir. You are appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31-412-8 parole hearing to consider regular parole, absolute discharge upon arrest. Just give me one moment. Thank you. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. If you can see on the video conference screen, I'll begin with the opposite end of the bench. We have the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. At the center, we have our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. Next to me is the Honorable Mr. David Neal. And my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead for this hearing. I would like to begin this hearing with a summary. Mr. Samuel Knott is 49 years old. The crimes of first degree murder, kidnapping, and theft occurred on or about March 9, 1990. He was approximately 19 years old at the time of the instant offense. On February 28, 1991, he was found guilty by jury trial. On March 29, 1991, he was sentence of life imprisonment for murder in addition to 10 years for kidnapping and 5 years for theft. The latter two counts, which have since expired. His conviction was appealed and upheld on April 22, 1993. Mr. Ma has been parole eligible since March 22, 2015. It should be noted that Mr. Knott has a prior criminal history that included several arrests and a misdemeanor conviction for shoplifting. Mr. Knott was also a suspect of conspiracy to commit murder, kidnapping, and armed robbery out of Florida at the time of the incident offense. I will read a summary of the offense in question. On March 9, 1990, Thomas Klasek, John Paul Hartley Jones and Mr. Knott received a ride from Mr. Chad Butcher. While Mr. Butcher was driving, Mr. Knott pointed a gun at him and told him to pull over so John Paul Hartley Jones could drive. During the entire encounter, the victim was told that they were going to rob him and leave him in the desert, but he was repeatedly assured that they were not going to kill him. They drove to an isolated desert location near Sacaton, where Thomas Plasek, John Paul Hartley Jones, and Mr. Knott held the victim at gunpoint, approximately 300 yards into the desert. At that location, they shot and killed the victim. The co-defendants covered the body with brush and left in the victim's car. They were apprehended a couple of weeks later when an insurance claim was submitted on the car that belonged to the victim. During a post-Miranda interview, Mr. Knott admitted to participating in the murder of Chad Butcher. Additionally, Mr. Knott admitted that they had committed a similar murder in Florida by stabbing an unknown man in order to steal his car approximately 2 months before the murder of Chad Butcher. And that is the short version of the case. According to Mr. Knott's institutional progress report, he's had considerable programming and release plan that includes living in a halfway house and seeking employment and self-reliance. He's had a limited history in the Department of Corrections from 1992 to 2008, with his last major on May 7, 2004 for possession and manufacturing a weapon. This is his fifth hearing before the board. He has letters of support from his family and friends, but there are also numerous letters from victims' representatives opposing parole. It should be noted that we have a letter dated January 24th, 2019, in the mouth of the County Attorney's Office opposing Mr. Knott's parole. And I will take this time to ask if we have inmates, supporters, and victims' representatives in the room?
Yes, sir.
On behalf of the inmate? Okay, and?
Just the victim on the phone. The victim is available right now. You guys can try to call her again, Michelle. She was out of the room at the time you guys called her, but she'll be the one appearing by phone, and then I have letters to read.
Okay, very good. And let me try to add that telephone call right now, and I do apologize to guests. Good morning. Kennedy?
Yes.
This is Louis Quinones with the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. We understand that you want to participate in this hearing?
Yes.
Okay, if you'll just give me a second, I'm going to merge calls and then we will continue with the hearing, okay, ma'am?
Okay, I just want to listen in. I'm not going to comment.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Okay, I dispatched in a second call, so we have a Ms. Kennedy and also Ms. Pollack on the phone. Hello?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
Right, thank you. We'll continue with the hearing now. For the record, we just added a second representative on the phone, and we'll continue with the hearing, but for the record, I've already read the introduction. So, Mr. Knott, this is another opportunity for the board to get to know you. Before I ask this question, I recognize that you have a counsel in the room. So, sir, did you want to begin the discussion, or are you okay with us just beginning questions with Mr. Knott?
I'm perfectly Howard Standard, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I'm perfectly fine with you beginning with Mr. Knott. I'd like to wrap it up with you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so again, Mr. Knott, this is another opportunity for the board to get to know you. Can you tell us about the crimes that resulted in your incarceration and why you think you should be considered for supervised release? Thank you, sir.
The crime that occurred started out as a robbery. We went out to get some money. We had no transportation. Our goal was to get to California. We made a discussion. Jones recommended that we rob somebody, take their car, take their money. I foolishly agreed, and I went along with the design. So I participated in a crime that ended up costing Mr. Butcher his life.
Thank you, sir. And is that your entire account of the incident offense?
We went down to golf and stuff. We looked around. Jones came over, introduced us to Mr. Butcher. He made mention that he thought this would be a good choice. We went out. We got in the car. He had agreed to give us a ride. On the ride, I pulled the gun. I asked him to pull over. At that time, he got out of the car. Jones got out of the car, got into the driver's seat. We went into the desert. And when we got to the desert, we got out of the car. I asked Mr. Butcher to get out of the car. He got out of the car. He stated that it was cold and that he had asthma. So I handed him his inhaler. I gave him his coat. We walked over into the desert a ways. Jones asked him for his wallet. And I said, okay. We had the wallet. We had the car. I said, let's go. When I turned around, Mr. Cook Blazik had a rifle that had been taken from the back seat of Chad's car, and he shot him. At that moment, I don't know what I felt. I can't even describe it. I was lost. I relive that moment every day of my life. I was under the impression we were going to rob the young man, we were going to take his car, drive to California. I picture that day in my head every day. I've been here ever since it's occurred. I relive it every moment. I got no excuse for what I did. I could have taken many routes to change. I could have said no. I could have walked away from the design to go rob somebody. I could have not been there. I could have not participated. I could have gone out and stuck my thumb out on the side of the road and walked away from everything. And I question myself every day as to why I even allowed myself to participate in this.
Mr. Knott, I'd like like to ask you a question because I've had the opportunity to look at this case from many different angles. We well know there's more than one defendant in this case. And with time, I think the thing that has really disturbed me is the cruelty and the debunk beyond the obvious of a murder taking a life and the trauma that that's caused to family and loved ones. I don't understand the cruelty. What was happening in your life and in your opinion, the lives of those around you, that would lead to this behavior? Because as I stated in the summary, we're not here for this, but it would seem that there were some other violent crimes that happened out of state. So what sort of mind frame were you in then that would attract you to violence and such cruelty? Thank you, Mr. Knott.
Well, the violence was not meant to be. And the reason I had possession of the original gun for the crime was due to the prior crime that had occurred in Florida. I had hoped that by taking possession of the gun, that during the time of this crime for the robbery, which was what the original crime in Florida was supposed to be, just a robbery, no violence involved, that I would negate the chances that something violent would happen. What occurred was Mr. Butcher, when we went to rob him, had a gun in his back seat. That was unbeknownst to any of us. Had I had the only gun in the situation, he was to be taken to the desert, relieved of his wallet, his car, we were to get back into the car and drive away. Once we realized there was a gun in the back seat and Mr. Plazek picked up the gun, I had no control over what occurred. I couldn't stop him from doing what he did. He did what he did. And I never thought that far ahead. I didn't expect a gun in the car. I didn't expect any violence to occur. I expected the man to be handed his nail, his jacket, to walk back into the city, unarmed, uninjured, shaken up, and we would have been gone and left the state, and I would have been in California.
Well, Mr. Knott, as we continue, let me say up front, I realize you're not the same person that you were when you were 19 years old, but it is always my concern as a member of this board as to how an individual has developed inside the Department of Corrections, whether they've been effectively rehabilitated. But there's also the business of the interest of justice. And this is why I state that I've been consistently disturbed about the cruelty in this case. I think, and I hope I'm not straying, but am I correct that there was a portion during this event where Mr. Plazek was taken to a hotel room? Is that right?
Taken to a hotel room?
No.
I don't recall that.
Okay, so he was just picked up. With the intention of being robbed and taken to the desert?
He was to be picked up. We went to the Gulf and stuff to find somebody to rob. Chad Isaac Butcher was the individual that Jones located, brought over, and indicated was the person we should rob. We took him to the desert. In the desert, the sole purpose of going to the desert was to make sure he was outside the city far enough that by the time we robbed him, taken his wallet, gotten his money, gotten back in the car, we could have gone back, picked up the others, and been out of the city and down the road towards California before he could make it back into the city to notify anybody of the robbery.
Okay, so just so that you know, there are not mixing up cases. There's a passage in the pre-sentence report that says on March 9, 1990, Samuel Knott Thomas Placek and John Paul Motley Jones went to Metro Center, in particular the miniature golf and arcade center named Golf and Stuff, where they intended to find a person who they would rob, kill, and steal their vehicle. John Jones and his girl there
stated
the defendants needed to ride back to the motel, and this girl persuaded victim Chad Butcher, who apparently did not know, she did not know, to give him a ride. The three defendants and the victim drove to the motel, where the defendants invited Chad Butcher into the room. Chad Butcher was introduced, introduced the three girls. Samuel Mott then asked the victim if he could give the three male defendants a ride to a friend's house with the money. So, where is the sudden loss in your memory about a motel? And displaying him in front of other people.
I do not recall him ever returning to the hotel. It was the three of us, John Paul Jones, Tom Plazek, and me, who went to Golf and Stuff. We picked up Chad Ashley Butcher, and Jones brought him over, introduced him to us, said this is the guy we should rob. We got in Isaac Butcher's car. We drove down the road. We ended up pulling the gun on him, taking him out to the desert. I never recall taking him to the hotel, introducing him to any of the females, or having any interaction at the hotel with him.
Okay, Mr. Mott, you stated that you were powerless to stop this event, and I'm kind of curious as to why you felt that way, because were you not with your other compatriots or friends at that time, whether or not somebody else had a gun?
I was with two individuals that I knew. I did not consider them friends. We were not buddies. We were not compatriots. We were associates. I had lived with John Paul Hartley Jones in Iowa. We had shared rent on the trail. We were not friends. We did not hang out. We did not associate in the same circles. We were traveling companions. That's what we were.
Well, thank you for such a direct account of that. I know I'm asking some very pointed questions, but sometimes that's my job, to be direct. And I appreciate you accounting for that. If we can continue. I noticed that you have a release plan that includes living in a halfway house and seeking employment. So do you have any plans that are more specific than that? Have you found a halfway house that will accept you?
Yes, I've been accepted into Reborn Living. I have family who's willing to pay for up to 1 year of my stay so that I can reacquaint myself with changes of society and technology and whatnot. The halfway house is going to assist me in that. I will be seeking a job, and they've also told me they can assist me with that. I have contacted several colleges to inquire about enrolling for property management courses. My father has currently started selling some of his holdings back east and is looking into buying several properties out here in the Yuma area. And he wants me to come out and manage his properties, which is why it would be vital for me to start taking the courses when I get out. From there, I hope to help him manage his properties, help and assist people. The properties he wants to set up will be for the purposes of renting to people who are coming out here to visit family here at the prison system, so that they can in turn have a better relationship with their families. We hope to encourage people to do so that it helps those who are here have a better family bond when they get out.
Thank you, sir. Again, I noticed you had a limited history of discipline in the Department of Corrections from 1992 through 2008. Your last major was almost 15 years ago for possession or manufacturing a weapon. And in fairness to you, I recognize it's been a long time, so I commend you for your behavior. I will revisit this. What was the possession? possession or manufacturing a weapon ticket about again?
In DOC, we have hobbycraft. We do paper mache, we do cardboard, we put plaster on it, we make different items. I had taken apart a razor blade that was for shaving, and I had a razor that I was using to cut up the cardboard. The officer found it, saw it on my bed, and wrote me up, and the way he wrote it up was, instead of the contraband item, he wrote it up as the manufacturing of a weapon.
Okay, my last question before I ask fellow board members if they have anything they would like to ask you is, in revisiting your sense of powerlessness in this crime, why did you... But let me ask this again. After the murder, did you remain in Arizona?
Yes. Contrary to what our original goal was, which was to leave Arizona, the shooting of Mr. Butcher haunted me, for a better word. And although several others voiced the fact that we should load up the car and leave, I wouldn't leave. And for some reason, even though they were free to take the car and leave, they didn't.
Okay.
So we ended up staying here.
Thank you, Mr. Knott. I'll ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you. Yes, sir. Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Knott, the files kind of indicate that you were the leader of the group. At one point, you admitted to being the leader of the group. You handled the money, you handled the finances, you made the plans. Is that correct?
That is not correct.
Okay.
If I was the ringleader at the time in which I was arrested in Texas, none of the individuals that came to that was with Texas with me, which are the same individuals that were here, came to visit me, came to bail me out, came to do anything for me. They left. They left Texas. They left me sitting in the county jail in Texas. I had no idea where they had gone, what they had done. When I came to Arizona, they were already here.
Okay.
I had no control over them. They had gone all the way up to Vegas and come back on their own. So for somebody who's supposedly a leader, I've got no power to lead.
Well, I'm only referring to this particular incident, so I'm not referring to any other incidents. My understanding is that...
Sir, which incident?
The one here in Phoenix, which you are currently in custody for.
I attempted to take control of the situation by taking possession of the gun for this crime, which I admit I participated in, so that they would minimize the amount of issues that happened. I was terrified after the incident in Florida that if somebody else had the gun, they would indeed end up doing something just like this. I took possession of the gun and attempted to take control of the situation. However, at the time of the crime, when we ended up robbing Mr. Butcher, he had a gun in the back seat of his car, which was taken and used for the commission of the crime. Had that gun not been there in his possession, which is his we would have robbed him because I had possession of the gun and he would have never been shot.
So let me ask you one more question. So I did hear you say earlier that you couldn't do anything to prevent the victim from being shot. Did you attempt to do anything or stop him?
I wasn't even aware he was going to be shot. I knew that Plazek had the gun because we got out of the car. I turned around, I looked at him. When I knew he had the gun, we locked him out. Jones asked him for his wallet. He handed Jones the wallet. I looked at the guys and says, "Let's go." And that's when, boom, 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 The gun went off and I went, wow. What? I was attempting to get them back into the car to drive away without this incident occurring the way it did. That's why I had possession of the gun at the beginning of this crime. I admit my participation in the robbery. I admit my participation in foolish behavior. I regret this every day of my life. I relive this every day of my life. I could have not participated. I could have not gone along with it. I could have walked away. I could have stuck my thumb out and hitchhiked to California. But I thought by taking possession of the gun in this situation, I could prevent this kind of ordeal from occurring.
Is that saying that you do have several certificates on file program that you take? So what has really changed differently between the time this incident occurred and now, sir?
A great deal. I have learned that I do not need to rely on anybody else to take care of myself. I can provide for myself no matter how hard it gets. I can do it without. Pardon me. I can work. I can educate myself. If things get tough, you tighten the belt, you continue on with your life. Why do you need to go out and have any problems? I've also found that I've got a knack for assisting the young men that come in here. A lot of people could try to get them up, take them under their belt, and get them into things they shouldn't. I've come to realize that as a person who is an independent and not associated with gangs, affiliations, scamming, drugs, I can give these people a chance, talk to them, counsel them, and better them. If they're not willing to be helped, I walk away. I don't need to participate or interact with the people who do this kind of thing. I'm strong enough to say, I don't need that. I don't want to be a part of that.
All right, thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, Mr. Moore.
Yes, sir, thank you. Mr. Knott, when you were asked about being the leader, or that conversation was going on about you being the leader, and you made a statement that when you were arrested in Texas, that the rest of the people left you there, and you didn't know where they were. Okay, and I can understand that, but if you didn't know where they went, how did you connect with them again in Arizona?
I came to Arizona after the release of my arrest to see my mother, who was currently living here. When I got to my mother's house, I had been informed by my mother that they had come to Arizona, looked her up, and made contact with her, and was there.
Okay, so then my next question with that is, that explains how you found out they were here. If they left you like that, why would you look them up after they got here? Why wouldn't you just do your own thing?
I didn't look them up. They were at my mother's. They looked my mother up where I was still in jail in Texas.
Okay. Well,
when I came from Texas to Arizona, they were already here in Arizona with my mother.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yes, the Honorable Mr. I'm sorry, I'm not right.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Kohanis. Well, that's not, I think that you, if I heard it correct, that you admit that you that you were involved in the offense. And I do take note, based on the information from your attorney, that during the trial, I believe that Judge Cole was involved. Do you feel that, sir, that you got a fair trial, sir? In view of everything that you know and everything that you've said to us today and in the past, did you get a fair trial, sir?
I believe I did. I committed the crime. I participated in the crime. I was part of the crime. I think that's part of why I decided not to continue on to California. I think part of me really wanted to be God. And I think that's why I refused to leave the state. And that's why when I was arrested, I didn't fight it. I didn't argue it. I think I was looking to make amends for what I had been a part of. And when Judge Cole gave me the 25 to life, I know Judge Cole's history. I know his nickname from the other inmates that were being tried. And when he gave me a 25 to life, I took that as a sign that he in turn saw the potential that even though he was known as the hanging judge, that he saw something that meant that he knew I needed to pay amends for what I'd done, but he also saw the potential that someday I could reform myself and actually get stronger, become a better person, and be a part of society again, and not make the mistakes that I've lived with all these years.
Okay, I believe that up front, Mr. Juarez indicated that, of course, this is, we're not trying, and this is not a trial, we're not a judge, nothing of that nature, we're just citizens of the state of Arizona, so, but how could you, in your own words, you know, I think we've heard everything that you've said, we've read your package, and you have a very extensive package, by the way, and there must be a whole lot of reading and a whole lot of trees were involved in your package, and I appreciate that, I'm saying that, I really appreciate that part of it, but how could you convince me, I won't speak for any other board members, how could you convince me that I should vote for you to be released at this time, sir? Did you understand what I was asking, sir?
I do.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I can't. I am who I am. We've got very limited time here, and none of you really know me. However, with that being said, I know who I am, and I know the changes I've made within myself. And it's evident in the packages you have there before you. I am not the same individual I was when I came to prison. I'll never go back to being that individual. I will no longer be weak enough to just go with the flow or be desperate enough to do something that is foolhardy or involve myself in criminal activities such as these again. I have dedicated the last 29 years of being here to asking myself, do I agree with the law? Do I agree with the rules of DOC? Not always. But the rules are there, and they're there for a reason. I follow. They want me to follow them, I follow. I want something, I need hygiene, I need something. I don't go out and rob my fellow inmates. I go to work for it. If I ain't got it, I work harder for it. I have never asked any of my family in all the years I've been here to assist me in my financial abilities. I take responsibility for myself and I take responsibility for my needs and what I need to do. I take responsibility for my actions and how I interact with those around me. If they're not worth my time and they're getting into trouble, I avoid them and I have nothing to do with them. If they're new, they need help, I assist them. If I can help them, wonderful. If they don't want to be helped, I move on to somebody who can be helped. As far as convincing the board, none of us know each other well enough to convince each other. There's nothing we can do. I mean, my actions speak for me, and I live by my actions. I have to pay the consequences of living by these actions in a corrupt society every day. But I still choose to do the right thing while I'm here, regardless of what that is with the people I'm surrounded by.
We'll just ask very briefly, sir, for time management purposes. And we read your release package and all that, but exactly what if this will decided to release you, what exactly would you do, let's say, for the next 12 months, sir?
For the next 12 months, most likely I will be able to get a job, I'm hoping, with my history. I don't know what the job economy is out there, but my every effort will be towards getting a job, and I will be applying to the college with the purposes of acquiring a degree for property management to assist my father with the properties he's currently purchasing down here in Yuma. I will be living in the halfway house for a minimum of 6 months, and my family has already stated that they're willing to extend that to a year should I need to stay in Phoenix for the college course. I was told that I could do it online, but I think for the benefit of reinstating myself into society, with the fact that I'm not familiar with the changes of society, the halfway house would be my best bet for at least the first year as a minimum.
Okay. Well, thank you so very much, sir, and thank you, Honorable Mr. Kiwanis, for allowing me to ask those questions.
Thank you, sir. Okay, Mr. Knott, this is the point of the hearing where we ask any supporters that we have on the telephone or in the room if they wish to speak on your behalf. Your attorney has stated that he would like to wrap it up in the end, but I will certainly defer to him if there's any order.
I'm sorry, Mr. Kiwanis.
I would like to defer to Mr. Knott's attorney if there's any order of individuals that wish to speak on behalf of Mr. Knott.
I do know that at least one of the two family members that's present would like to make a statement to the board.
Okay, how many, just for hands right now, how many people wish to speak on behalf of Mr. Knott today? Okay, what I am going to ask, because it's very important that the board manages time today, I'm not going to cut anybody off, but I will ask both supporters and representatives to please be concise and direct, as again, we have to manage time today, but hearing from the community is very important, so if you wish to approach the podium. State your name for the record.
Lauren Wilson.
And what would you like to share with the board then?
I'm just asking that the board look at his actions that he's taken. My cousin is very dedicated. When he gets dedicated to something, when he wants something, he gets very dedicated. I'm so nervous I can't tell it. I sound like an idiot right now. But anyways, he puts all of his heart into it. My cousin does not get in trouble, does not associate himself with the negativity, does not even have a tattoo. I know that sounds so small, but like, if you look at the majority of people in prison, it seems like 95% all tatted out and just, still continuing, negative things in prison and stuff like that. My cousin does not do that. I ask that you guys take that into consideration. I have had my real estate license for 13 years. Most all my years are in Texas, but I'm actually willing to get my license out here and move out here and help my cousin. He's wanting to get a property management. I know a lot about it, obviously, with my background. I know that you guys have the pink slip, copy of the pink slip. I have bought him a car. I still have a car. So he is able to get around if he does, if he's able to find work and stuff like that. So I have the financial means to be able to come out here and help him like that and get the car out, and stuff like that. So I just ask that you guys look at that. He never gets in trouble or anything. His job stability, every time he gets a job, and there, he keeps it for a long time. It's not like he just gets a job and then he quits. He literally is telling the truth. He has never asked me for a penny. None of us. And he just never asked his mom for a penny. My cousin's very independent. So I just ask that you all look at that and consider that. Thank you very much.
I did want to say that you did present very well. You said in the beginning that you felt like an idiot. You don't.
I do feel I'm sorry.
You sound very good, and I think you represented very well today, so I appreciate you appearing before the board today. Any questions from fellow board members? Okay, ma'am. Thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Kenyon, I just want to make sure for the record, since Mr. Knott is appearing on the video while Ms. Wilson was speaking, he was shedding a few tears, and I want to make sure that the board either saw it or bring it to the attention of the board.
God. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Do we have any other supporters of Mr. Knott that wish to speak today? Okay, then at this point of the hearing, I will defer to Mr. Lyons, and if there's a particular order of people that wish to speak.
Hello, are you speaking to...
No, ma'am, right now we have some individuals in the room who are going to, pardon me, we have a victim services coordinator who's going to read some letters from the victims, and then you'll be given a chance to speak before the board, okay, ma'am?
Mr. Kenyon, Ms. Kennedy?
Yes.
Is a supporter?
Yes.
Okay,
so I'm going to let some letters be read on behalf of the victims today, and then we will ask the individuals on the telephone if they want to speak before the board to close up the portion for the victim supporters, okay? And that's both Ms. Kennedy and Ms. And I'm sorry, your last name, ma'am?
Pollock,
thank you. You'll be able to speak at the end of the victim representation phase. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Carrie Garrison, and I'm a victim advocate here at the Department of Corrections. I do have three short letters to read. I will begin with the first one. This one is from Paula Butcher, Florida family and Chad. It is with a heavy heart that I write this letter regarding Samuel Knott, who is one of the young men who killed our youngest son here in Phoenix, Arizona in March of 1990. We understand that Samuel Knott was the ringleader of the men who shot and killed Chad Isaac Butcher. The murder was premeditated, and when they kidnapped him at gunpoint at the shopping center, what chance did he have against three guys? They just wanted a car and money with no regard for a life. I know that Chad would have given them the car and funds he might have had in exchange for his life. As a family, we have been deprived of Chad Isaac Butcher's interaction with our family and most likely with his children, with his wife and children, our grandchildren. Nothing can bring him back to us, but we still miss him every day. He was a well-loved son, brother, and uncle to our two-year-old grandson. All we have are memories, stories, and a headstone in the local cemetery where his body was laid to rest. We know that we have the promise from Scripture that we will see him again in eternity. That does not take away the ache we feel in our heart every time we think about Chad and what he would be like today. We have forgiven the three men who killed our son, but we do believe they should live with the consequences of their sin. Whether that means that Sam will not should be out on parole, we don't know. We have to leave that up to the parole board and those who have worked with Samuel Knott during his incarceration. Dennis and Barbara Butcher, mother and father of Chad Isaac Butcher. I also have a letter from Michelle Kennedy, who is on the phone. She's the sister of Chad. In March of 1990, Samuel Knott killed my brother, Chad Isaac Butcher, in cold blood. This coward shot him in the back and left his body to rot in the desert. For what? A vehicle and a minuscule amount of cash. When coppers crying, the coward pled no contest, knowing the jury would find him guilty and possibly sentence him to the death penalty. I believe in the 909, but our family did not receive that justice. This person has robbed our family and friends of a wonderful young man. Chad was bright, funny, hardworking, and determined to go places by furthering his education in Arizona. I am convinced he would have been an amazing father and done wonderful things in his life, had it not been cut short by the heartless acts of this monster, Samuel Knott. My brother Chad is never going to get out of his grave, and I believe enemy Samuel Knott should never be released from prison. I strongly urge that you deny his request for parole. Michelle Kennedy. And then This is from David Iris, Terry, and Janet Butcher. It is our understanding that the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency has scheduled a hearing on March 23rd, 2017 to consider reducing or modifying the sentence of a convicted murderer, Samuel Knott. I think they forgot to update the date. I am willing to inform you of a strong objection to any reduction in the sentence for this person who murdered my cousin, Chad Butcher, so he could steal Chad's car. Chad was a kind and generous young man and shot and killed by individuals who are on a multi-state rampage of murder and mayhem. Please send an appropriate message to Mr. Knott, his partners, and those following in his footsteps by denying parole and enforcing his full sentence. Thank you for taking the time to consider our point of view. And then, Christopher Bailey is the victim who survived the attack in Florida, and I'm not sure if the board still has the statement he presented in 2015 in your packets. I do have a copy of that here if you guys are interested. He was stabbed 13 times. He is not providing a new statement this time, but his feelings have not changed. He just wants the board to know that he still does not feel that Mr. Knapp should be paroled. And as just a reminder, he was stabbed 13 times, he had to run, and these men chased him down. And he had yelled at them and said, "You have my car, you have my wallet, please just leave me alone." Mr. Knott explained, "Oh no, I'm killing you, just like I told you I would." To which I replied, "I think you probably already have." At which point they ended up getting him, putting him on the hood of the car, because he fell from exhaustion from running from them after being stabbed. So they did bury him under brush because they thought he was dead. He happened to survive. And I do have the pictures of that. I don't know if you guys still have it.
I don't think it's necessary to give every board member these pictures, but for the main file, I'll certainly accept them.
And here's a copy of the letters I read, and then there's a copy of Mr.
Thank you very much.
Any questions?
No, thank you. I have one more individual. On the telephone, I recognize that Ms. Kelly, I think, is just listening, but Ms. Pollack, would you like to share anything with the board today?
Yes, I want to thank you for hearing me. I know that my son has a good heart. I know that he has done his time. He has gone beyond the 25. He's going to be 50 years old in a few months here. He has given his life. He has more than paid the price. And I know that when he gets out, just as he's done in there, he's going to continue to do good and he's going to continue to do right. And he has things to offer. He's offered a lot in prison. He's helped the young people that have come in. A lot of people are not coming back because of the way my son has talked to them and the prices that they would pay for decisions they've made. A lot of people are on the outside being successful because of words that he's spoken to them. My son can reach even more people on the outside. He has repented and he has more than changed his ways. I ask that you be merciful to him, that you help those that he is yet to reach by letting him receive his parole and go out and touch life that he can touch and prevent those situations that could end up before you in the future. I have no doubt he's going to take care of himself, and he's not going to be a burden to the state in any fashion, shape, or form. He's a worker. He's more than proved that. He's not a troublemaker. He's more than proved that. He's more than repentful. He's more than proved that. And I would ask that you look not at what was, not what that has been changed, but what is and what can be and shall be to come in the ways of positive and good and great things. If he only has the opportunity placed before him. I thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. And I do want to apologize to our guest today. I did have it out of order in patching in the phone today. I had it mixed up that Ms. Pollack was on the victim's representative side, not the inmate's supporter. So we are out of order at the end here. So I will defer back to the prosecutor if you have anything you want to show the board, and then I will speak to Mr. Knott's attorney and Mr. Knott to close. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Matthew Elias. I'm a deputy county attorney with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. The Maricopa County Attorney's Office submitted a letter on January 24, 2009 to the board objecting to the parole request from Mr. Knott. In that letter, it indicated that Mr. Knott admitted that the group had committed a similar murder in Florida. That was an error on my part in drafting the letter. The situation in Florida did not result in actually the murder of that victim, as was presented by the victim advocate, and the pictures in the letter that were submitted to the board as part of the file indicate that the victim in Florida actually survived the attack. Now, in his statement today, Mr. Knott said multiple times that this incident here in Arizona was supposed to be just a robbery. And Mr. Knott as well expressed shock that this robbery turned into a murder when Mr. Bushroom shot and killed. That shock and that notion that this was going to be just a robbery is not plausible based on the history of Mr. Knott and the other individuals that were involved in the murder of Chad Butcher. This incident was their MO, as a way to speak. This is what they had done in Florida, where they robbed an individual, took him to a place where they could obtain his vehicle and his money. In Florida, they stabbed him 13 times, and he fled running away from them, and they chased him down and buried him, thinking that he was dead. He actually survived that attack. Because of that, it's not plausible for Mr. Knott to say that this incident here in Arizona with the victim, Chad Butcher, was just going to be a robbery, and that somehow he was shocked that this robbery ended up in the murder of Chad Butcher. And this is the same thing that happened in Florida. They were repeating that same behavior here in Arizona. And for those reasons, the brutality of the offense in this case and the history that this was their plan, and this was the way that they operated. For those reasons, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office respectfully requests that this board deny parole or release to Mr. Knott. Are there any questions?
So I had one question. What happened to Mr. Jones?
I do not know.
Okay.
I know Mr. Placek was convicted of first degree murder and sentenced to life, as well as Mr. Knott. I do not, off the top of my head, know what happened to Mr. Jones.
Okay, I was just asking because in there it said that Mr. Jones was dismissed of the charges. I was just trying to, just for that. That's okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yes, just a quick one. And I recognize that it may be another piece of information that is not under purview, but I'm not sure if I asked this question before, but I am a little perplexed as to why there weren't charges pursued in Florida for such a violent crime.
And I do not know.
Okay.
I do not know if I have any questions.
I believe the victim services would have something to offer.
Okay. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Elias. Yes, Ms. Moody.
I think I can address both of those questions. And my name is Jim Calamity from Department of Correction Victim Services. In prior hearings with the co-defendant and this inmate, we researched with the legal paralegal from Maricopa County Attorney's Office, and they, in the one of the pre-sentence reports, it indicated that the third defendant, I can't remember his name, was set for trial, and then at the last minute, the county dropped it, but we don't know why it was dropped. There was some other cases involved as well besides this one, and it had been drawn for a long time, so we're not sure why it wasn't. But it was set for trial going on, and then all of a sudden, every half an hour they dropped it, so it was dismissed. And then in regards to the charges in Florida, it was part of the crime, but it was an incident where they had pulled over and engaged in, I think, smoking some marijuana. And what between the time that they were either gathering the charges or out on bond or arrested and released, then the time passed and they were going to Texas. And in fact, I believe the car that they stole from the victim in Florida was found in Texas, but they were even only gone from that. This is what I was told. That they were already on the way to Arizona before they could bring them back for those charges. So it all just kind of got slipped between the cracks and were never pursued. And although they knew, both states knew that they were charges going on and that they were in custody here in Arizona.
Thank you, Ms. Okay, any further information, Mr. Elias?
No, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Elias. Okay, sir, we're getting close to the end of the hearing, so in what order would you like to proceed?
I invite to make a statement to the board.
Thank you, sir.
I've been practicing in Howard Center on behalf of Mr. Knott. To the members of the board, I've been practicing in Arizona, both first as a deputy county attorney of Maricopa County and then on the defense side now for a little more than 30 years. I have never appeared before the Board of Executive Clemency. I take on private cases and I routinely tell people there's no place for it, I'm not going to take your money because this is not the kind of argument I want to be making on your behalf. The situation's not a good fit. I thought differently about Mr. Knott, about the way I was contacted by the family. There's just something unique about this situation. In digging through what the purpose of the clemency of this board's position is, it's under 31412, when is the release on parole and the considerations. Is there a substantial probability that Mr. Knott will remain at liberty without violating the law? He has spent more time in custody in his 49 years than he has spent out of custody. He has learned to live within the very confined rules and regulations of the Department of Corrections with no substantial violations since 2004. And as you heard, that was regarding the razor blade incident that he got from the shop. It was not used as a weapon. Could have been administratively handled as contraband. They dealt with it as a weapons violation. The other part of the board's requirement, though, was whether or not he will, substantial probability that he will violate the law, is whether or not it's in the best interest of the state to consider a parole release. That, in my mind, is the harder question. When we start talking about what is the best interest of the state, I think about when the victim stands up. Excuse me. Water, I'm going to be dead here. May I step outside for one second?
Yes, sir. This is one of the two things.
Why, that came out of order. That's not contagious. When we speak about the best interest of the state, we've had a couple of people come forward and talk about the interest of justice. And I think about that because I've been on both sides of the equation. I've been an advocate for the state. I've been representing clients accused of crimes for decades. And I've sat as a pro tem judge in Maricopa County. What are the interests of justice? It's both seeking a fair punishment for the crime committed and not more, not making it more punitive than it has to be. The rehabilitation factor, I do believe Mr. Knott has shown he can comply with the rules of the DOC. He has shown he's been rehabilitated. He's not tattooed out. He's not associated with the bad influences there. He just deserves an opportunity to extend what he has shown in the DOC for the last two decades to be the person he is now. The interest of justice were set forth by Judge Cole. I had the pleasure of being before Judge Cole, as I indicated in my memorandum, multiple times. Judge Cole was always fair, but it was on the harsh side. I don't know what went on in that courtroom. Mr. Terribio, his attorney, Mr. Knott's attorney at the time, is no longer around. I'm not going to invade the psyche of a judge 30 years after the fact and ask Judge Cole what his thought process was, if he could remember. But there had to be something that was said, either during the bench trial, during the pleadings leading up to the sentencing, or during sentencing, that Judge Cole sat there and said, this is an individual who at 20 years of age, committing a crime at about 19, deserves to be looked at 25 years later. He didn't have to give that opportunity. Mr. Jimenez asked about the Florida men. I do believe that Florida was prosecuted. It was a 10-year term that they handed down and ran concurrent with what's going on here. But I have the paperwork with me and I don't see it at this time. So Florida was dealt with. It was dealt with after his conviction here because he never got out of custody from the time he was here. And Mr. Bailey's prior letter to the board, which was again received today, or his comment to the board, I listened to the prior proceeding. Mr. Bailey indicated that the board should not be cutting Mr. Knott's time short. The statute says no less than 25 years and then he's eligible for consideration. He has served the statutory time. Now the issue is, does he deserve an opportunity to reintegrate back in society? Is he going to be a threat to violate the law? All we can do is hope that Mr. Knott's statement is accurate. He knows who he is. He's not the person that committed these crimes 3 decades ago. He has done the best that he can do, staying out of trouble while in DOC, now mentoring others, and as he clearly indicated, if he doesn't think it's somebody he can help in DOC, he doesn't want to help them. He doesn't want to be put in that position where his efforts are going to go to waste. He wants to mentor those people and keep those people out of trouble where they're open-minded to doing that. I debated for a while about whether or not I should make the next statement, and this goes back to Member Johnson. You and I had a case in the early 90s. And the real issue is this a Kevin Owens or is this a Stephen Lake? And in my mind, he is closer to the Kevin Owens. The Kevin Owens that I happened to meet just a couple of years ago who's out and doing well. There is a room for rehabilitation. There is a room for self-improvement. He's maxed out the abilities of DOC. If he stays in any longer, it's solely a punitive sanction at this point. This is not somebody who's going to be let out of custody and under no supervision. So there's still a penance to pay. There's still supervision. There's still something he's got to do in the interest of justice. But the interest of justice is, what is a fair sentence in light of all the facts versus over-punishing somebody, especially somebody who was 19 or 20 at the time, who's done everything he can possibly do in the situation he's currently in to be remorseful, to think about this every day, to never go back down the roads he went down. He can apologize, it doesn't change the facts. He committed the heinous crime that's here. He participated in the heinous crime in Florida. But that was the 19-year-old, 20-year-old Mr. Knott who in a 90-day span committed those offenses. 90 days of a crime spree, heinous crime spree, that has led to more than 30 years of incarceration. I stand before the board my first time in all my years practicing because this is the one individual that I truly believe consideration at this point in time for release on parole, and I would ask the board to so consider that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions from board members? Okay, Mr. Knott, we're getting very close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? Let me ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us, but this is your hearing. So, is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know or understand before the board goes into discussion, deliberates on this case? And whoever's on the phone, if you can hit mute, we're getting some garble on your end. We need silence right now. We have two people on the phone right now. You can get mute. Thank you. Okay, so Mr. Knott, is there a final statement you would like to make before the board goes into discussion, deliberates, and makes a decision on this case?
I will live with what has occurred, as I have lived for 30 years, and I will recall it every day. I will dream about it every night. And what I have come to understand is, although I cannot change the past, I can change the person I am. I can change how I behaved. I can change who I was and become somebody else. And becoming somebody else is becoming somebody who takes responsibility for himself. And I'm willing to take that. I will be under constant supervision upon getting out. I'm not a free man. I will continue to follow the rules. And I will continue to try to make myself a person that is a benefit to society, not a hindrance or a threat. That's the best I can do. I just ask that the board consider the fact that I am able and willing and have shown that I can change and I am no longer who I was.
Thank you, Mr. Nott. The board will be going into discussion now. They sound like that we're... I'm having some difficulty with people on the phone right now. Is there some sort of static coming through on... I've asked both the individuals on the phone if you could hit mute. Okay, Mr. Nott, the board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like that we're speaking with you directly. But is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona? So if we'll just remain on the phone, we'll come back to you shortly with our decision. Thank you. The board is now in discussion. For the board members, I will show that I think that this is a difficult case, a bit more difficult than most, and I'll state why. I have said on numerous occasions that when an individual sentenced to 25 years to life, the possibility of life is very real, but the possibility of parole is real as well. Mr. Nott was very young when this event happened. I recognize that he was involved in some very bad behavior, a spree crime, if you will, that involved several states. But I would ignore that he has presented, he's very accountable today, that he has an excellent history of compliance inside the Department of Corrections for the last 10 years. And this is probably a hard thing to say, but to me it's a matter of personal integrity. But the opposition to victims, for me, as a board member, is not a standalone reason either to consider whether or not an individual can be safely returned to the community. At this point, I am not sure whether or not it serves or benefits the people of Arizona or serves the interest of justice to return Mr. Knott to the community under supervised release at this point. But I do want to say that I believe, and it's an assessment, that Mr. Knott is on a trajectory of rehabilitation. And I want to offer that encouragement. But that's where I'll begin the discussion. Thank you. Yes, the Honorable Mr. Johnson.
No, I have to agree. I think that Mr. Knott has done some great things since he's been incarcerated. He has some excellent programming that he's actually done. And I tell you a couple things that I'm concerned about. One of them is mainly Dr. Wright asked him to explain to this board why he feels as though he should be paroled. And I believe his comments was, I can't do that. And he went on to explain and make a statement to say that I am who I am. Although when I asked him, he did, say that he was a changed person from what he was back then to where he's at now. But that comment that he couldn't do that, I would think that, we do, have a responsibility and someone to say that I can't explain it, or I am who I am. And I think, a person is who he is, but if he's a changed person, then he's a different person, and he's not that same person, which he said he was back when this incident first occurred. But I just have that bothered me, that statement when he made that statement, I am who I am, and I can't explain that. So I don't think that just bothered me. We have a responsibility that I think we want more out of the person that's being released, the knowledge that they're not going to commit a crime and not get back involved in criminal activity. This was an incident that occurred when he was a young man. However, it was a premeditated incident in which they all conspired and talked about doing it. They all worked on it. So he said he's not the same person that he was back then, but that statement, I am who I am, that just kind of took me back.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Now, before you, we continue, I did want to add, because I missed an opportunity to say this, and I do apologize for riding the fence a bit. If there is a concern that I had in the dialogue was his statement that he was powerless to do anything, and I have a tough time accepting that in the context of my own life outside of law enforcement. I'm not taking back that I believe that he is on a good trajectory in terms of his rehabilitation, but I hear what you're saying. Thank you, sir. Yes, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Mr. Canales.
One thing I wanted to add here is that according to the criminal history that came out of Florida, it appears that the homicide was handled as a conspiracy to commit, along with the robbery and kidnapping, and the plea was a murder contendere, and it was a 20-year sentence flat, no more than less than 20 years. But it was a disposition there. But with that said, the totality of this crime spree is very troublesome to me, because they left Florida thinking they had killed their victim there, as stated by Mr. Knott. They went to Texas with the intent of stealing another car, and who knows what they were doing to the victim at that point in time, because they moved on to Arizona and parts west. And then Mr. Knott, after being abandoned by his friends, reconnected with his friends. And very purposefully and intentionally picked a victim or found a victim to steal his car and money. Like you said, I agree that Mr. Knott did have some control over the situation, whether he was a ringleader, whether he was pulling the trigger on the gun that killed the victim. He could have done something to at least try to intervene in this. And it just the totality of it to me is more than just one crime in Arizona. It's a crime spree, Western gun, but that's not an excuse, that's not a defense. And I'm just, at this point in time, I'm not in favor of a release for Mr. Knott. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Dr. Wright.
Thank you, sir. I think that one of the things that I've tried to comprehend within myself is the question that was raised by several board members, and that was his role as a leader. Because I think leadership is very important back, although he was only 20 years old, whatever that age was, and all of them were very young at the time. But leader or not leader, down in Florida, in Texas, then Arizona. I would have to admit, I am concerned there. I'm concerned, and Mr. Neal has mentioned it several times, at least twice today, how, I'm going to skip Texas for a moment, but Florida, I know Texas came in between, Arizona, but how did they end up, how did Mr. Knott end up in Arizona with these same people? I know he gave the explanation that they were there with his mother, and which means I must have been, and I'm not a genius, and I was not there, as he stated, but there must have been some kind of connection for them to have left Texas and left him down in Texas, show up in Arizona, and there they are together again. Just can't quite comprehend that. I'm sure there's a reason for it, but I can't quite comprehend it myself. And in view of the fact that they showed up together in Arizona, in view of the fact that some would indicate, and I'm not saying it's true, false, or indifferent, but some has indicated that he did play a leadership role, I'm just not in favor at this time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Before I make a motion, I do want to say some business
Counsel. I just want to add one more thing. I did make a note in here, actually, too, when talking about the incident that occurred here, which he's incarcerated for. He said several times he couldn't do anything to prevent it because he was walking away, basically. But he also recently just made a statement that he takes responsibility for himself. That's the best that he can do. And that's almost exactly what, you know, he's saying. And he was involved in, but he has to be responsible for the actions of others when he's involved in planning and putting together an event. He can't just say, well, I'm responsible for my own actions, because the actions of other people are surrounding what he's done. That's one of my reluctance, that he just keeps insisting that he's only responsible for his own actions. But in this case, had they not all conspired to do the robbery and gotten together, then it wouldn't have happened. So, you know, I just think that that's just really bothering me, that his actions would be, he's only concerned about his own actions, but yet they plan these activities and wind up physically hurting someone, and that he takes no responsibility for the actions of the others as they plan these activities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Before I make a motion, I do want to state, because I dare say that we hear a lot of cases, and sooner or later, there are just matters of personal integrity that I think need to be addressed. And as I stated earlier, and I meant, I do not want to be dismissive of the good that anyone is doing inside the Department of Corrections and the rehabilitation process, and it is a factor. But based on everything that we gathered today, I'm going to make a motion, and that is to deny regular parole option and discharge of home arrest for Mr. Samuel Nottie, C number 084838. And based on the year of the crime, I'm asking for 1 year set off, and that is my motion.
Second.
Agreed.
Seconded by the Honorable Mr. Neal, agreed upon by the Honorable Dr. Wright, by the Honorable Mr. Johnson. Release type denied. Reasons 44A, 41HA. Reasons for denial are as follows: serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim, age of the victim, serious bodily injury. I'll ask my fellow board members, I recognize that there are multiple victims in the context of the spree, but we only have one victim in this case, so should we bypass the multiple victims?
Yeah.
Okay. Victim harassment, as to how the victim was treated, leading to his death. Assaultive behavior, just 1 second, okay, prior criminal history, 1 second, to appear before this board in approximately 1 year. Did you hear the reasons why we denied regular parole, absolute discharge, and home arrest?
Yes, sir, I did.
thank you, sir. Well, we wish you continued rehabilitation in Southern Department of Corrections. Please stay safe, and thank you for being so pleasant and direct with the board today. This will bring our name to the close. Thank you.
Can you put the citizen back on the phone?